The Honorable Elijah Muhammad asked us to refer to ourselves as the black man, the original people of the earth. And when we saw ourselves as black people, then every person of color on the earth, we identified with them. So in the 60s, nothing could happen on the African continent that black people in America were not concerned with. Nothing could happen in the Caribbean or in Brazil or in Central America or in the islands of the Pacific where black people were concerned that we didn't feel them, because a nervous system was being created for black people that we felt the pain of one another wherever we were on the earth. But after Malcolm was assassinated, and Martin was assassinated, and Elijah Muhammad was gone, notice the shift in language. We were no longer black. In New York City, there were several black shows. There was Black News. Was it Positively Black? Mm-hmm. There was the national program with Tony Brown called Black Journal.
Right.
After the death of these giants, now the wise people said, let's change the language so we can change their focus and give them a new understanding of who they are. So subtly, there was no more black news, no more Positively Black. Black Journal became Tony's Journal. And all over America, wherever black was describing that program, Black Star in Baltimore, that left. And then the new language was the minority, the disadvantaged. Then came African American. And what was happening is a severing of the nervous system that black had made, tying us to the struggle of black people all over the world. So now there can be a Darfur. Who cares? That's not us. There can be a Rwanda and Burundi. Who cares? That's not us. So we don't feel suffering until there's a Katrina. Oh, that's us. But what's going on in Haiti? That's not us. What's going on in Brazil, in Costa Rica, in Colombia, in Nicaragua, in Guatemala? That is not us. So the language shift.
Ending whackness in the name of blackness. You are listening to the Cedric Muhammad and Black Coffee Show only at blackcoffeechannel.com.
I'm black, whether I'm poor or rich or poor, though it's all the same. I'm black, even though my skin's kind of light. That means my ancestors by somebody white. I'm black, so I like to sing, dance, and crack jokes. Eat good food and be around black. I'm black, so I like the oldies on Sundays. Drink all night and still go to work Monday. I'm black, so I like my kids looking real nice. Cause I've been poor and I know what it feels like. I'm black, and I'ma say it loud like James Brown. People be proud cause we all up in the game now. I'm black, and I'ma hold my right fist real high. I might see my man and we might get real high. I'm black, and I know it and I ain't afraid to show it. I'm black, and I'm a genius and a motherfucking poet. You know it.
So proud to be just who I am. So proud to say that I'm me. So proud to be just who I am. So proud to be so free.
I'm black.
So proud to say that I'm me.
I'm black.
The all of the struggle and the hate.
I'm black.
And I'm not afraid to say
I'm
black.
Black. I got a heart full of bravery. Do it for my peoples that went through slavery. I'm black, so you know I'm young in the sports. 90% chance I get hung in the court. I'm black, don't you be scared of me, mister. Cause you don't really seem to be scared of my sister. I'm black, and I can buy first class too, or buy an exotic car and like Merc pass you. I'm black, and I don't need a tan in the winter. Mind strong and powerful, non-cypher can't enter. I'm black, and I don't need jewelry to shine. My skin colors like the jewelry is blind. I'm black, they focus on the negative attention. Do something positive and never get mentioned. I'm black, listen, it's a fact. Original man, I wouldn't change it if I could, and that's that.
Yeah. So proud to be just who I am. So proud to say that I'm me. So proud to be just who I am. So proud to
direction. Look in the mirror, see Malcolm and Martin reflection.
I'm black,
just like the Panthers, looking for an answer. This prejudice, it's like a cancer.
I'm black,
look in my eyes, the wool can't get pulled over. Look in my cars, I stay getting pulled over.
I'm black,
meaning public enemies, number one government. Looking in the hood, sending in the...
I'm black,
I grew up off the good times show. Drink liquor, smoke, then let the good times roll.
I'm black,
I live for my wife and my seeds and my mom with a bond only God could exceed.
I'm black,
I got to show my homeboys love. First thing you learned in the hood was homeboy love.
I'm black,
and I'm mad if I ain't nothing else.
I'm black,
I'm beautiful, I love myself.
Love yeah. Myself. Just who I am.
So proud to say that I'm me.
So proud to be just who I am.
So proud to be so free.
I'm black.
So proud to say that I made it.
I'm black.
With the struggle and the hate.
I'm black.
And I'm glad for you to say
I'm black.
Quite a few of the speakers are touching on the issue of, if I may call it, economic independence. One of the callers was talking about we need to increase trade among ourselves. When we have a situation where a country on the continent has been liberated, can we talk about freedom when that country has gained political independence but not economic independence? Can one still then talk about freedom?
Well, I mean, the issue of choice is very important. Let's not make a mistake by suggesting that we don't make these wrong choices. We do make them. But also, let us also acknowledge that the Africans themselves are to blame, because whenever there are elections, we go back and vote for the very same people who are not assisting us in maximizing our ability to make choices. So effectively, in as much as we can identify the individuals and blame them for whatever they do, we must also take the blame. I mean, if you take the case of South Africa, you've had the president who wanted to overstay his welcome, and the South Africans said no. So, fortunately, that happened while our democracy is still at the embryonic stage. But when people stay too long, what they do, they begin to amass a coterie of individuals and also the state apparatus that ultimately begin to sustain them. So there are choices that and mistakes that Africans themselves actually make, and we need to start acknowledging that.
I agree. Now, let me read some of your comments. LA's off from Brooklyn. He says, I agree with you completely regarding independence and economic stability. If we look at Haiti, for example, they're proud that they gained so-called independence from France and the USA, when in fact they still carry westernized customs, practice Catholicism, and run a Romanized system. And they paid France millions for so-called damages. Where's the independence? Eleazar from Brooklyn. Jeff X from Winston-Salem. He said, did Brother Mugabe fail the people in the revolution by giving the children of the colonizers a role in the government of a freed Zimbabwe? Interesting. I think Jeff is referring to the 20 seats that were reserved for the whites right after the quote-unquote independence movement in Zimbabwe. Dawu from Dayton says, peace, said, I'm checking out the show. And Glenn from Philly says, Glenn, I don't know if you caught my defense of short selling. I'm not with this movement, Glenn, to stop short selling. I've come a long way on short selling. I'm half for it and half against it. Go figure. Glenn says, peace, said, I'm putting Zimbabwe in the context of the U.S. Democratic Revolution or evolution, puts it into a proper context. In regards to their economy, what can they do to strengthen their currency, particularly with the high rates of unemployment that already exist? Well, I think the hyperinflation rate in Zimbabwe is approaching a billion. It's ridiculous. Zimbabwe, of its own efforts, cannot save its currency. It would take all of Southern Africa to unite and form a regional currency, which I proposed about 7 years ago. I proposed a gold price currency board. But if the Southern African nations would tie their currency to the yuan or the euro within a certain range of the price of gold, they would be fine. I wrote an op-ed for the Wall Street Journal on that in 2001. So Zimbabwe, in and of itself, whether the MDC or Mugabe stays, they will not be able to fix their currency problem. We're in an era now where you have to have what is known as an optical currency area. Nobel Prize winner in economics, Bob Mundell, talks about this. You have to have a certain size of the economy, certain amount of trade in between nations. Southern Africa is perfect now to have its own regional currency. That's my solution. I'm so damn tired, though. Oh, by the way, I don't know if I'm feeling good, but had to tell me whether I'm looking good, but I sure am smelling good today, because I have mixed Blue Nile and China Musk. I mixed together two mixtures. Keenan from Chicago, if you're there, holler if you hear me. I had a mixture of Blue Nile and China Musk and a mixture of Cocoa Mango and Cool Water. They were both getting low. So like the countries of Southern Africa should do, I merged them. So I have Cool Water, Cocoa Mango, Blue Nile, and China Musk on. If I go outside right now, I'll be stung by a bee. I got in my hands again the hottest book on the market right now, Maddening Behaviors. Some I hear, a lot I see. Stories by Tara Nichols and Nicole Shivers. Maybe around the fourth hour, we'll talk to one of the authors. This book is going to convert me from my encyclopedia reading into the world of short stories and fiction. But there's nothing false or fictitious about the lessons in this book, Maddening Behaviors. Excellent book, the best I've ever read, showing how cultural worldviews affect the relationship between blacks in America and blacks in Africa. Okay? So I'm going to open the floor up. I've presented much of what I wanted to get into. Let me cap it off by reading a certain section of the Final Call article, What Next for Zimbabwe, written by Saeed Shabazz. Brother Saeed writes in a section called U.S. Motives in Zimbabwe Question. Says here, Professor Stephen Zooms, assistant professor of politics at the University of San Francisco, wrote July 1st that the U.S. stance against Mugabe is at best hypocritical. Mr. Mugabe is condemned for a lack of democracy, but the U.S. supports dictators throughout Africa, he argued. Indeed, the U.S. currently provides economic aid and security assistance to repressive African regimes such as Swaziland, Congo, Togo, Chad, Ivory Coast, Rwanda, Gabon, Egypt, Equatorial Guinea, and Tunisia. As long as the U.S. maintains such a blatant double standard, U.S. credibility is seriously compromised, said the professor. Abdul Akbar Muhammad, Africa and the World syndicated columnist, said that the problem isn't that Mr. Mugabe is a dictator. The desire is for whites to keep land in Zimbabwe and other parts of Southern Africa, he said in a July 3rd appearance on the Cliff Kelly Show on WVON AM in Chicago. The problem dates back to the Reagan administration, which reneged on U.S. commitments to pay for land that whites took from black Zimbabweans. He said, Mr. Mugabe is being made an example of to keep land return movements from breaking out in the region, said Mr. Muhammad. Now, this is a good point that Brother Akbar is making, because there are still land return movements and unresolved issues in Africa. I know Kenya and South Africa have big, it never gets reported over here, but the issue of land being returned to blacks is still a big issue. So Brother Akbar says that Mr. Mugabe is being made an example to keep that kind of issue off the table and to keep it from spreading throughout Southern Africa. Massive violence didn't stop elections in Kenya and other countries, he observed. The opposition leader chose to drop out of the elections, but he could have run, Mr. Muhammad said. We cannot allow the press to shape how we view someone unless we can hear from them or get their side, he said. Dr. Leonard Jeffries, professor of Africana Studies and Political Science at City College in New York City and a leading Pan-Africanist, said that the Western media and its leaders are going out of their way to demonize President Mugabe and the electoral process of Zimbabwe. The issue was and always will be about land, Dr. Jeffries said. And if Mugabe can hold off the British from trying to place his people back into colonial status, then that causes people in South Africa, Namibia, and Mozambique to take notice, and a movement will ensue across Southern Africa, Dr. Jeffries argued. Is Brother Akbar, have Brother Akbar and Dr. Jeffries touched on something that nobody in the Western media is reporting? Could it be that what has been framed as a land issue only in Zimbabwe is really a land issue in several other countries in Africa? And if Mugabe is successful, this could spread. I don't know. Dr. Jeffries continues. He says, men such as Marcus Garvey, Paul Robeson, and the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan have always understood that when African leaders turned away from a survival culture to a development culture, there would be an onslaught from the colonial powers to discredit the vision of Africans controlling their resources, Dr. Jeffries told The Final Call. Just look at what these same powers that want to demonize Mugabe did to Patrice Lumumba back in 1960. He had no real power. He had just a vision, and they killed him, said Dr. Jeffries, referring to the assassination of the prime minister, the first prime minister of the Congo. Dr. Davis Ghazi, author of Zimbabwe, Racism and the Land Question, a Colonial Legacy, said by demonizing Zimbabwe's president is a smokescreen. A discussion about the rights and wrongs made by individual personalities such as Robert Mugabe at this stage are just a distraction from the real issue. The issue is that we want our land and we want to keep it. Brother Saeed, in his Final Call article, What Next for Zimbabwe, Brother Saeed writes, after defeating white minority rulers in 1979, Mr. Mugabe, then Zimbabwe's prime minister, and other leaders entered into an agreement with the British. After 3 months of haggling, there was a willing buyer, willing seller arrangement with white minority farmers who owned most of the land, selling some land to black Zimbabwean families. Whites were to be compensated by the British government. In 1985, Mr. Mugabe, who had been elected president, crafted the 1985 Land Acquisition Act, which gave the government first right to purchase excess land to distribute to the landless. The act had limited impact because Zimbabwe's government did not have enough money to compensate the landowners, and white farmers mounted an organized effort to resist the Land Act. Now, let me read this again. The act had limited impact. Oh, I got to start all over again. This is such an important point. So I'm doing this so that you all can do your own research, or you can wonder what is or isn't being brought up by the media. This is not to defend Mugabe or to defend the MDC. We have to move past that. There's certain facts about the history of Zimbabwe, formerly known as Rhodesia, that have to be analyzed before you really, to me, can make an informed decision either way. Some Pan-Africanists just have a knee-jerk reaction. They just defend any African leader without knowing any facts. And some people who have an antipathy towards African leaders will oppose them without any acquaintance of the facts. So let me read this again. This is key. After defeating white minority rulers in 1979, Mr. Mugabe, then Zimbabwe's prime minister, and other leaders entered into an agreement with the British. After 3 months of haggling, there was a willing buyer, willing seller arrangement with white minority farmers who owned most of the land, selling some land to black Zimbabwe families. Whites were to be compensated by the British government. In 1985, Mr. Mugabe, who had been elected president, crafted the 1985 Land Acquisition Act, which gave the government first right to purchase excess land to distribute to the landless. The act had limited impact because Zimbabwe's government did not have enough money to compensate the landowners, and white farmers mounted an organized effort to resist the Land Act. What Land Act? The 1985 Land Acquisition Act. Between 1980 and 1990, only 71,000 families were resettled out of a targeted number of 162,000 families. In 1997, British Secretary of State Clare Short stopped payments to Zimbabwe for the land requisition after only paying out 44 million of the 2 billion promised during negotiations to end the war. In 2000, Zimbabwe's War Resistance Association marched against white farmers, forcing the Mugabe administration to step up land reclamation efforts. The move also put the leaders in the crosshairs of the West, particularly former colonial power Britain. The U.S. and U.K. played the key roles in making the land reform program a volatile issue, claiming that Mr. Mugabe's land policies exacerbated the nation's economic woes, according to his supporters. Now, let me show some other viewpoints. Bill Fletcher, former director of the Washington, D.C. Lobby Trans-Africa Forum. I know Bill. He's a good brother. Bill told The Final Call, President Mugabe has lost all credibility, and there was now a need for a middle ground, a compromise. I think there should be a transitional government form, Mr. Fletcher said. Without a compromise, President Mugabe may find himself in the same predicament as former Liberian President Charles Taylor on the way to The Hague before the International Criminal Court, charged with crimes against humanity. Malefe Kete-Asante, a Pan-Africanist and president of the Association of Nubian Kemetic Heritage, doubts the MDC has the confidence of Zimbabweans. Who would form the new government, he asked. Now, this is the great Afrocentrist Malefe Asante. Malefe Asante says, the MDC is an instrument of the Western imperialists in the most concrete terms. It receives its money, resources, and support from the most reactionary elements in the Western countries, and has shown itself to be against the general interests of the masses of the Zimbabwean people. That's Dr. Asante. What do you think?
Listening to the Cedric Muhammad and Black Coffee Show only at blackcoffeechannel.com.
Let me catch up on some of your comments. A lot of information we're going through. I'm going to read something from Kasatu. Anyone know who Kasatu is? Let me read a Wall Street Journal article from July 9th. It says, powerful South African labor group ponders how hard to press Mugabe. As the United Nations Security Council weighs sanctions against Zimbabwe, a powerful group already squeezing President Mugabe is divided on whether to unleash more of its economic leverage against his regime. The Congress of South Africa Trade Unions, or COSATU, I'm going to say that again. The Congress of South African Trade Unions, that's what COSATU is, a 1.8 million member organization and a key political base within South Africa's ruling African National Congress Party, the ANC, has for a decade engaged in low volume protests against Mr. Mugabe. This spring, public opinion in South Africa swung further in COSATU's direction when port workers, members of one of the group's 21 affiliates, blocked a Chinese ship laden with arms for landlocked Zimbabwe from offloading the weapons in South Africa. Other African countries quickly supported the action, forcing the ship back to China. The action, along with the violence of this year's Zimbabwean election campaign, pushed the ANC to take a public stand against Zimbabwe's leader for the first time. That shift left South Africa's President Thabo Mbeki alone in his support for his longtime friend. Despite the victory, COSATU is balking at a broader economic embargo. Its radical wing has pushed for shutting down the border crossing here in Bettbridge, a low-slung, muddy town on the Limpopo River that is one of the busiest trade corridors in southern Africa. South Africa is Zimbabwe's biggest trading partner, and Zimbabwe receives approximately 65% of its imports through Bettbridge. Much of Zimbabwe's exports, platinum and gold, heads toward world markets through this crossing. Union leaders say a blockade here could deny Zimbabwe its main source of much-needed foreign exchange. That could cripple the government and bring about Mr. Mugabe's downfall. But union leaders also worry that such an action could backfire. Some of their union colleagues in Zimbabwe were rounded up and jailed during the armed shipment standoff. Retaliation by Mr. Mugabe against Zimbabwe's workers and opposition supporters could be more severe if any South Africa Union action started to bite. We regard ourselves as a revolutionary trade union in regard to social and trade issues. Zimbabwe for us is a moral issue, says Randall Howard, the Secretary General of South Africa's Transport Workers Union. The group is the COSATU affiliate whose workers led the April port strike in Durban that stranded the Chinese ship. But blockades and sanctions? That's a complex situation, Mr. Howard said. South African domestic political considerations are also at play. Jacob Zuma, whom COSATU members helped elect as the new ANC president late last year, has been an outspoken critic of Mr. Gabi, in marked contrast to Mr. Mbeke, whom Mr. Zuma beat in the party race. Zimbabwe opposition leader Morgan Tsvangirai pulled out of a runoff with Mr. Mugabe last month, citing violence and intimidation. His party, the Movement for Democratic Change, the MDC, says government supporters killed 110 of its members. Mr. Mugabe blamed the opposition for the violence. After the Mugabe declared victory, or after Mr. Mugabe declared victory, the African Union, a political ally of African states or alliance of African states, called on him to share power with Mr. Tsvangirai. The two have agreed to negotiate, but each wants to be named the senior member of any unity accord. Western diplomats who say they will recognize only a government led by Mr. Tsvangirai are now scrambling for a way to force out Mr. Mugabe, who has ruled Zimbabwe for 28 years. A draft Security Council resolution under consideration would slap sanctions against him and 13 senior members of his Zimbabwe African National Union Patriotic Front Party, ZANU-PF, and the heads of its security forces. The measures would bolster a 3-year-old U.S. travel and economic ban against 120 ZANU-PF members. Now, we mentioned COSATU. Let's hear from a member of COSATU, Bongani Monsuku. He's the international rep for the Congress of South African Trade Unions. I caught him on an excellent program called Point Blank, coming out of South Africa. I just want to massage your mental. This is a mental massage. I'm going to talk about this book, Maddening Behaviors, Some I Hear, A Lot I See, about 11 young women who have left America and find adventure in Africa, but it wasn't what they anticipated. Let's get a taste of a representative of COSATU from the continent, not a Pan-Africanist in America, and not a Mugabe hater in London. This is from the continent.
Hello and welcome to Point Blank. My name is Mpo Tsedu and my guest is Bongani Masuku, the International Relations Officer of COSATU, which is the Congress of South African Trade Unions. Following the much criticized elections in Zimbabwe, the country's newly crowned president is attending a meeting of head of state in Egypt amid pressure from many quarters not to accord President Robert Gabriel Mugabe the presidential status that has been bestowed on him by the country's highest court judge. A statement of the SADC election observer mission to Zimbabwe stated that the environment that prevailed impinged on the credibility of the electoral process. It said the elections did not represent the will of the people of Zimbabwe. The mission further recommended that SADC mediation efforts be continued in order to assist the people and leadership of Zimbabwe to resolve the problems they are facing and bring the country to normalcy. The mission noted, albeit in concurrence with what South African President Thabo Mbeki has been saying all along, that Zimbabwe needed concerted efforts of its sons and daughters for socio-economic development and national unity. What is the view of the broader civic movement in the SADC region? Bongani Masuku of COSATU is my guest. Bongani, welcome.
Thank you.
You obviously, COSATU has been following the Zimbabwe situation quite in its earlier days before, you know, it could reach the current impasse. What has been your observations and the positions, for instance, following the outcome of the elections?
Yeah, no, thank you so much for the opportunity. The first thing is that there are three interrelated observation that we have made. The first one is that governments in the region or government in the region have a tendency to either close ranks or not openly criticize each other or challenge each other for wrongdoing, even when it concerns protocol that exists. For instance, SADC has got a democratic election protocol that governs how processes of democratic, free and fair election should be conducted. But there is a tendency to close ranks even then. Mm. Sometimes they reluctantly move to criticize each other at a particular point. That's the first point. The second point is that such situations also create a possibility for a devastating impact on the ordinary people. It's ordinary people who suffer. The humanitarian disaster is worse than anything. The socio-economic disaster is more terrifying than anything else. Then the last point is that this has created a momentum for civil society in Southern Africa, or progressive organizations in general, to be able to rally around and claim their space. Because the problem sometimes is that there is lack of democracy because progressive forces or civil society forces have allowed politicians as if democracy must come from above. It's the duty of civil society to keep governments on their toes. So those are the three interrelated points that we have observed.
So what do you make out of the current meeting of head of states? Some have been calling for President Mugabe's head, actually. You know, others are saying sanctions, others are saying occupation, others are saying alienation. How do you suppose or propose that going forward the situation in Zimbabwe is addressed?
First of all, we will indicate that we don't expect much to come from the AU for the various reasons that we have related to. But the second point of the matter is that our view is that President Robert Mugabe was not elected by the people of Zimbabwe, I'm sorry, in conditions that would allow them to say they've exercised their will. So our view is that he might be isolated, because this will set a bad precedent. It will set a situation where next time in Botswana you'll have a situation where the government, one person, literally bulldozes his way against the majority of the people and still want recognition. So our view is that he must not be recognized by all head of state. But what must happen is that he must be forced to a situation where he talks with the party, with the opposition, and they create a climate for proper democratic, free and fair elections in Zimbabwe. Mm. So that is our view. Otherwise, we would not necessarily expect him to run the government of Zimbabwe, to represent the people of Zimbabwe, or in any way to claim that he had the mandate of the people of Zimbabwe, because we know the circumstances under which you are. Even when SADC, which has been reluctant for all along, has been able to speak out openly in the African Pan-African Parliament and all other organs, so it's very clear that there is not much that we should expect other than the effect of isolation.
But why is there so much attention on Zimbabwe? I mean, for instance, I mean, one other country which pronounced in the SADC region against Zimbabwe was Swaziland. King Mswati himself, his record is questionable himself, and I haven't seen any outcry really from the civic movement to say, hey, what is the king saying when he's got his own skeletons in Swaziland? And I mean, that's what political organizations are saying out of Swaziland.
No, I think the point they're asking is very legitimate, is very very honest. We have, as COSATU, been saying, there's no way you can talk about Zimbabwe without talking about Swaziland, or talk about Swaziland without talking about Zimbabwe. These are the twins, because they are related in many ways. But the fact of the matter is that it is unfortunate that in many instances, the media chooses what should be the issues at their time. We do not believe that the rights of certain people are less important than others. Because, for instance, you'll agree with me that Swaziland is the oldest state of emergence. Since 1973, political parties have been banned and no political activity has ever been allowed. The king monopolizes every political space. That is why you are correct to say that he can't say, you can't have a pot saying the kettle is darker than itself, because than itself, because they are both dark. So the king has no moral authority, has no claim to anything democratic or legitimate. He has no mandate to represent the people of the region in every in any instance. Worse still, the fact that he has been made to pronounce himself and call for democracy, yet he is creating.
They're talking about the king of Swaziland, folks, who's calling for democracy, according to reports, but yet he's a monarch. my Africanologists out there, from what I understand, Angola, how many elections has Angola had over the last 30 years? point I'm trying to elevate, as we learn from our brother on the continent, you may not agree with Kosatu's position against Brother Mugabe, or you may think it's balanced, but he's on the ground, and what he's saying is of value. We'll get back to this. But a point I want to make is the American and England alliance, very selective. See, they hit you with an argument that they don't apply equally abroad. And this is the hypocrisy that many see. So the host of this show was excellent in bringing up the reference to Swaziland. And in the article from The Final Call, let me hit that section again. Says here, Professor Stephen Zooms. He says, indeed, the U.S. currently provides economic aid and security assistance to repressive African regimes such as Swaziland, Congo, Togo, Chad, Ivory Coast, Rwanda, Gabon, Egypt, Equatorial Guinea, and Tunisia. He says, as long as the U.S. maintains such a blatant double standard, U.S. credibility is seriously compromised. Okay, let me get back to Kosatu.
Condition. Swaziland is going for election just now, September, October. Political parties remain banned. The constitution is only that was drifted by the royal family and all that. So I'm just saying those are some of the unfortunate things. In fact, I think it must be clear. SADC, if it by allowing the king to play such a role, was worsening the impression that is creating to the world about its seriousness about democracy. In fact, others could have been better placed, including Botswana, to talk further than Swaziland.
Now, which space does civil society occupy now, perhaps, in resolving the situation in Zimbabwe?
Of course, I think civil society believes that the power of the people to leverage a democratic process is very important. So civil society plays the role, one of raising popular awareness about the issues of Zimbabwe, but also is playing a role of putting pressure on leaders to act, to save people, to save lives, but also to save a situation of an economy that was once the breadbasket of the region that has been turned into a crisis. So it's playing a role of leveraging those processes. But lastly, it's playing the most important role of closing the space in the context of lack of leadership. Mm-hmm. Where there is no proper leadership on certain matters, civil society steps forward and closes that space.
Do you think that there has been lack of leadership? You share the same sentiments as Madiba?
I may not necessarily specifically pronounce on that part, or personalities, but what we can just say that SADC as an institution has not been able to sufficiently provide leadership on all matters that have been in the region, including the Zimbabwean problem.
President Mugabe has been installed as president now. He has himself called for talks. The MDC has called for talks. The world has really called for talks. Under whose terms do they happen?
I think you'll agree with me that any talk is a product of a bargaining process. It's a talk, it's a product of the balance of power between contending forces. So he, fortunately or unfortunately, he still wields very serious power in Zimbabwe, no doubt about that. So that means that when he goes to the bargaining table, he is a real force to contend with. So that, which means that in this particular scenario of Zimbabwe today, the terms, I may not say it will be his terms, but I would say that he will have a huge influence on the terms that will be the outcome. But no doubt, the both forces in Zimbabwe constitute or wield quite a solid amount of power. So we do sense that it may not necessarily be any particular person's power, but both forces have considerable amount of power that they will use to influence the shifts on the negotiation table.
Do you think that the leaders, whether they be African or let's rather talk about the SADC region leaders, do not understand the fight that President Mugabe says he's been fighting? And I'm now talking about what he always refers to as his fight against imperialism, capitalism, and neoliberalism.
Yeah, no, absolutely. See, that one is a very complex one. First of all, COSATU recognizes itself as part of the worldwide movement against imperialism. But the starting point is that the critical fighters of imperialism is the people. The question is, when you no longer derive your mandate from the people, how else can you have the authority to fight imperialism? Because imperialism is the domination of the world's rich, few, ruthlessly oppressive, rich minority.
Okay, this is a hell of a point that I want to interject on. This brother is saying, he's not denying that President Mugabe was a revolutionary, but he's saying you get your mandate from the people. So aside from whether the Zimbabwe government is correct in its in many of its strong defense arguments explaining the situation, has President Mugabe lost the mandate of the people? Now, if he lost that election and then had a President Bush-like move that installed him as president, is that a sign that he has lost the mandate of the people? And I had, and let's keep it real. We can sit, any of us can sit over here in America, talk about Africa liberation, but you ain't the ones that's dealing with a million percent inflation. So now, whether you are for or against President Mugabe, those people over there are experiencing the worst hyperinflation since Germany, 1921. Please continue, brother.
With insurmountable power and who controls so many institutions, and they use them to impose their will on the peoples of the world. Who else can resist that on behalf of the people than the people themselves? So once you no longer have mandate of the people, then it's difficult for you to have claim legitimacy to the struggle against imperialism. I can make an example of Nicaragua, that when the Nicaraguan, when the Sandinistas moved to overthrow the U.S. imposed dictator, the U.S. was able, used its massive power, military power, to reverse the gain. When to reverse the gains in such a way that the Sandinistas even lost ground, even in some election, through the brutal forces interference of the U.S. But it did not necessarily claim to be fighting imperialism on its own. It went back, mobilized the people, reorganized. It's back into power now, the Sandinistas, through democratic means. Daniel Ortega is the president. Through democratic means, through popular, so it can claim to be fighting imperialism because it represents the people. So imperialism is when the people stand up to defend their natural resources, to defend their land, to defend their resources, but nobody can do it on their behalf, the people themselves. So that means that no one can claim to brutalize the people in the name of fighting imperialism. Fighting imperialism means the people taking up all they can. The Cubans have demonstrated it fairly well when the U.S. power was trying to interfere in Cuba. The people of Cuba, through the Bay of Pigs and other wars, took up arms themselves. It's not Fidel Castro who fought the U.S. It was the people of Cuba who defended it. Who else can fight imperialism better than those who are the victims of imperialism?
So in this case?
Sorry?
In this case, in Zimbabwe?
In this case, the people of Zimbabwe. When the fight against imperialism rages, certainly, they must be the ones who are in the forefront. Because, for instance, the problem is that I think we must be honest about the fact that some liberation movements rhetorically remained anti-imperialist, but practically were integrated into the global capitalist economy. They benefited and continued to loot. In fact, in some instances, they acted as gatekeepers, some of them, as gatekeepers of imperialism, protecting imperialism and savagely attacking the standards of living, the conditions of workers, the condition of the poor. So in the name of imperialism, they continued, a minority benefited and continued to loot. I can make an example, for instance, even in Angola. That is the same problem, where the contracts of the oil and diamond mines are in the hands of a few. It's not the people of Angola who are benefiting from those. That is why multinationals from the U.S. and the other countries, including China, are able to vulturously feed on those companies. So the same thing with Zimbabwe, that the people of Zimbabwe for years have been yearning for land, have been yearning for economic freedom, have been yearning that their economy must stop being controlled by the West, be it Britain and the U.S., it must be controlled by themselves. But an elite that was benefiting allowed that to continue. But now that it has fallen off, you see, the marriage of convenience has fallen off with whosoever they had. Now they must be able to remember that there was once a struggle against imperialism. But the people of Zimbabwe have not benefited. So what we are saying, that the best defense against the looting of people's resources is the people united and mobilized consistently against any form of imperialist interference and looting of their resources.
Okay, I just saw that thought. They were going to return and talk about other international developments, socio-economic and political.
Okay, I gave you all 12 minutes of that. You know, got to learn the accent. I'm getting better. Many of you out there have no problem picking up what the brother said, but I think it was clear in general. Now, two organizations I want everybody to get better acquainted with. Stop following what's happening in Zimbabwe just from the Western media. Get acquainted with the organizations who are the players on the ground. You just heard that brother. He's the international representative of COSATU. His name is Bongani Motsuku. But COSATU is the Congress of South African Trade Unions, COSATU. Google them. You can go to their website. And then SADC. You kept hearing the mention of SADC. That's the Southern African Development Community. Get acquainted with them. I actually support SADC's mediation of this conflict. They've been a little weak, but they make some good points. And who better to solve this problem in Zimbabwe, aside from the Zimbabwean people, but their neighbors in Southern Africa? Let me catch up on all your posts. Y'all are blowing me up. Keenan from Chicago. He says, peace, Brother Cedric, long time. I hear you, black man, but I've never gone that deep into mixing frequencies. It sounds extremely strong rather than understated. Keenan is referring to my new oil mixture, which is going to have a bee stinging me later on today. I have mixed in one bottle cool water, cocoa mango, Blue Nile, and China musk. Brother Keenan sounds like he does not approve of this unorthodox blend. Okay. Glenn from Philly says, peace said, I am admittedly very weak in regards to knowledge of African affairs and the economic issues that exist there. Is it a matter of governance? Is it a matter of resources? Is it a matter of external influences? At the risk of simplifying it, I'm just attempting to get a better grasp of things. Glenn, it's all of those things. It's as you say. It's a matter of governance, a matter of resources, and a matter of external influences. Let me give you another example. I caught this today earlier from the African news media, which I am watching nonstop. I have shut down CNN, MSNBC, and Fox. Did you all know that there was a meeting taking place between Condoleezza Rice and the African trade ministers over the issue of an African free trade agreement with the U.S.? Let's get the latest.
The United States government plans to continue to renew and expand the Africa Growth and Opportunity Act, known as AGOA, to other countries in Africa who have not yet qualified for it. U.S. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice made this promise to the continent's ministers of trade and commerce who were gathered in Washington for the 7th annual conference of AGOA.
AGOA's main goal is to open American markets to Africa's goods and products. With the Doha round of talks long stalled, the program is promoted as an American alternative to expand trade. Rice says AGOA will add to the already vibrant economic activity on the continent.
A new spirit of responsibility is alive in Africa today, among people and governments that are meeting their own challenges, creating opportunity for all, connecting their citizens to the world, competing and succeeding in the global economy, and doing it themselves.
Secretary Rice expressed confidence in the future of Africa, irrespective of the present global economic crisis.
And I believe that over the past several years, there has been a sea change in the way that your nations approach your own challenges, in the way that America approaches our African friends, and in the way that the world perceives Africa.
The African ministers and top American officials will wrap up their deliberations later today before most of them head off to Geneva for more WTO negotiations.
But before they leave, they must complete several important issues. Among them is the issue of assisting poor African countries that do not have capacity to access American markets that are available to them. Manelisa Tubase, SABC News, Washington.
Now, you know, this is why I say we need an African lobby, because the fine print in some of these trade agreements, this WTO, my brother from another mother, Double M, Mark from D.C., that's the man that I go to when I need him to break down the fine print of these free trade agreements that these African leaders are signing, undermining regional efforts on the ground in Africa. You'll have countries in Africa that are members of SADC. They're members of SADC, right? The Southern African Development Community. They'll have their own agreements, and then they'll knuckleheads, and that's what they are when they do this. They'll go form a free trade agreement with America that will undermine the internal effort to unite African countries. Rod Ginyar, Culver City, California, he said, I've always agreed with justice by any means, but Mugabe has succumbed to the same weakness suffered by all the Caesars, self-absorption. But in the words of Chris Rock relating to OJ, he did it, but I understand. Rod Ginyar says, welcome back, by the way. Hope your woodshedding proves worth the time off. Thank you, Rod. Dawood from Dawood City, otherwise known as Dayton, Ohio. He says, Africa and other places around the globe is my thought. But it's funny, the new president, Obama, addresses the NAACP and calls for blacks in the U.S. to do for self. I think I heard this before, whites agree. Am I missing something? Glenn from Philly has come back. He says, said, I'm with you on this short-selling issue. First of all, naked shorting was already supposed to be illegal. I'm also always skeptical of targeted overregulation of the markets. See, Glenn from Philly and I are saying that the SEC's new move to make short selling illegal basically for 30 days I don't like it because I think short sellers provide a valuable service that the financial media should be doing and that financial analysts should be doing. One of the things I look at when I look at a stock, consider something for investment, I look at the level of short interest. Glenn from Philly, if you want to come on and explain what shorting is, you are welcome to end our show. But without the short sellers, short sellers are the haters of the market, if I may. Without haters in your life, you don't get truth. Sometimes you need a vicious, envious, jealous hater in your life to point out what you're doing wrong. Two books I recommend to learn more about short selling. The book called Sold Short, Uncovering Deception in the Markets by Manuel P. Asensio, and The Art of Short Selling by Catherine F. Staley. Now, I do not approve of short selling when you are trying to ruin African currencies. That's another subject, though. That makes me confused. Rod Ginyar says, I am furtively against any resolution for black people by anyone other than black people. The Zimbabwe situation hopefully will straighten out without the help of anyone of the G8 countries. Brother Vernon, Columbia, Maryland, he says, welcome back, bro. Thanks for keeping us informed. Thank you, Brother Vernon. Rod Ginyar says, Dr. Jeffries is so very right. More from him, please. He says, I am so sick of hearing from the likes of the Boers, that's B-O-O-R-S, who, for example, feel Southern Africa is theirs by birth. Since many of them were born there, there are also many Jews born in the land now known as Israel. Okay? Now, for the Muslims, if you read Fall of America, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad does make reference specifically to the future of Rhodesia, which is now Zimbabwe. I will let you all, since unfortunately Fall of America is allegedly known to be collecting dust in the homes of many Muslims, I will let you all dust off Fall of America and find the references to Rhodesia, now known as Zimbabwe, by the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. Okay? Cameron from Paterson, New Jersey, he says, greetings, my brother. I'm so glad you made the distinctions necessary to understand this topic. As you know, in the past, I've mentioned Taylor and Lumumba in reference to this topic, so you know I agree with you. This is a discussion of equity and property rights, but Africans are excluded. Hold on, everybody. I'm being affected. Van from Hopog, New York. My blood pressure. There's something that Van does. She sends me a subliminal message, hieroglyphic-like. She says, hi, Cedric. And she does the symbol. And she says, shouldn't all African countries push for land reclamation all at once? The West can't stop every African country at the same time. Just like all those Mexicans that attempt to rush the border gates all at once. Some get through, the others try again, later. That last point was not a joke, but just a reminder that we can't be scared anymore to claim what is ours. When other African countries see what is being done to Mugabe, they should be stepping up their land reclamation actions in support of Mugabe's land reclamation efforts. Oh, by the way, Cedric, symbol again, good hearing your voice. I'm shaking. You saw what Van was doing. I think Van from Hopog, New York, who has a new business. Van, tell us about your business and how we can utilize your services, please. She's saying all the African nations should unite and push for land reclamation at once. Isn't that a novel, beautiful idea? It's called unity. The same reason that we don't do that here, the Africans don't do it there. And I have to say this. The biggest enemies of the United States of Africa have been Africans. I'm going to say that one more time. The biggest enemies, or the worst enemies, of the effort to unite Africa in a union like the European Union have been African nations. It's two countries in particular. Anybody know the two nations who have been the worst self-haters fighting the effort or slowing down the effort to unite Africa? Dawood from Dawood City, he says, it sounds to me that some Africans need some help, whoever is in leadership. If the peoples are not happy, they're oppressing the people. The same thing is happening here in America, Kaka. I know the feeling. Dawood said he not pleased with none of them. Well, I think we have covered a lot of ground. Let me see if there's something here I can hit you with one more time. I'm afraid to walk outside this mixture of blends. They have a bunch of bumble and honeybees and wasps attacking me. It's a little, it is definitely not understated, Kenan. Cool water, Blue Nile, Cocoa Mango, and China Musk. First time. Oh, I have listeners in Brazil. I meant to tell you all this. Many people catching the show on demand in the archives. This is the method of choice. This person from Brazil told me they listen to the show on Sundays. That's their ritual. The Sunday ritual is to let the archives rip for a full day. Let me know if you're having a Cedric Muhammad and Black Coffee program, a thon. I'm intrigued. Maybe I'll call you on Sunday in the middle of it. Ah, man, Cameron came in the building. Cameron, did you hear Star's interview of Sheik on it was re-aired on the 4th of July? Anybody that heard Star's interview of Sheik, the three female singers in Sheik was excellent. Maybe I'll get their names so I can sound halfway intelligent. I listened to it 1.5 times. It was so good. Got an email from Star the other day. As you know, Star has gone through basically liver reconstructive surgery. And that's a very strong man right there. So keep him in your thoughts. Prayers, that's rough, dealing with a liver situation, but he's not complaining. Doing his show on Pulse 87, pulse87.com, if you want to listen to it and you're not in the New York area. Pulse 87. Don't be shy. Just send a comment in. We're going to do another show on the relationship between fathers and daughters. And does the Black community not care about this? Headed into hour number 3. Yes, I did see Obama's NAACP speech. And I got an open letter to Senator Obama that I want to read on his stance on Zimbabwe. You all are well prepared now to weigh that in the mix. July 16, 2008, hottest show in the diaspora. Even when I play some West Coast beats like this underneath my voice. Come on.
Ending whackness in the name of Blackness. You are listening to the Cedric Muhammad and Black Coffee Show only at blackcoffeechannel.com.